Welcome to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. Hosted by Beth Burschak, with expert advice from Jim Lang, Pittsburgh-based CPA, attorney, and retirement and estate planning expert. Jim is also the author of Retire Secure, Pay Taxes Later. To find out more about his book, his practice, Lang Financial Group, and how to secure Jim as a speaker for your next event, visit his website at retiresecure.com. Now, get ready to talk smart money.
We are talking smart money. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. I'm Beth Burschak, along with Jim Lang, CPA attorney, best-selling author of two editions of the book Retire Secure, Pay Taxes Later. And we also have a very special guest. Now, this is a show that all parents should pay attention to, all grandparents, all aunts, uncles, anybody that is responsible for a minor, because we have with us today Neil Godfrey. Hi, Neil. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Oh, we are so happy that you could join us. Now, Neil, is her very first book for adults was called Money Doesn't Grow on Trees, A Parent's Guide to Raising Financially Responsible Children. It went to number one on the New York Times bestseller list, and that was just the start. Neil, after that, you wrote another, 15 books?
Yeah, I know. It sort of indicates that I have no life.
You just spend all of your time writing books. Now, you've also been on Oprah, Good Morning America, The Today Show, NBC, CNN. So we are so glad that you could join us tonight. Now, can you take me back to when you wrote the first book, which was, I think it was published in, 1994?
Mm-hmm.
And what gave you the idea, first of all, to even write a book on how to raise financially responsible children?
Well, at that point, I was president of the first women's bank in New York City. And I watched women be disempowered handling their own money. And I did research and found out that it's because we didn't really learn anything when we were kids. And my two kids were little at that point. So I decided I would look for books for them. And there were none. Kids and money was not a topic. So my daughter, who was about 4 years old then, said, "Mommy, why don't you write the books?" So I didn't have a good excuse not to. So Mommy wrote the books, and really, I created the topic of kids and money back then.
And I want to give your website, because all of the books are on the website. It's childrensfinancialnetwork.com. Great stuff on there. And there are even things for kids to do on that website. You went on to form the Children's Financial Network. And I have to tell you this, Neil, Jim has read the first book, Money Doesn't Grow on Trees, so he just wants to get right into it.
Great. I've read your book, Jim, so.
Well, thank you. First, I want to tell you, I thought it was wonderful. And the second thing that I didn't like is I realized I'm not such a great financial parent. I'll tell you the thing that really threw me early. You suggested turning over to your teenager complete management of their clothing allowance and the total amount of money that they're going to spend annually for a number of things. And I thought, wow, I'm not even close to doing that.
Well, Jim, let's think about this. Hold it. Now, if you're a parent of a teenager, you wouldn't dream of making any buying decisions. Are you going to go out and buy them clothing? Come on. Why would you do that to yourself? So the fact of the matter is they're making the buying decisions. Let them make the spending decisions. You just set the budget. Let them go do it.
I actually think that's great, because we've just kind of done it on a piecemeal basis. We've never said, you know, here's how much you have per year or even per month. And it really, to me, gets people start thinking about budgeting early. And I was just astounded at how many things that I probably should be doing, but I'm not.
Did you take notes when you were reading the book?
I actually did.
It's never too late. It's never too late.
Now,
I promise you.
When you're talking about the money that Jim just mentioned, where you want the child to be responsible for their money if they're a teenager and even a budget for a year, where is that money coming from?
Well, in terms of clothing, what you're doing is you're actually saying to them on a quarterly basis, start your daughter out on a quarterly basis. That's number one. And so let's say back to school. The first thing you have to do is say to her, what do you think you need? Now, you're going to get a list that's unbelievable. Okay, just prepare yourself. And what you want her to do is start researching what she thinks the costs are for each one of those items. Then you sit down and go item by item and say, here's a news flash. You're going to be shopping at, and fill in the blank, whatever that is, and not at whatever you think you are going to do. And I don't think you need 10 pairs of jeans. I think you need 3. And I don't need, you think you need 4 pairs of sneakers. I think you need 2. And you go down item by item in terms of what it is and say, we are willing to put that amount of money into either a checking account so that she can have a debit card against that, or, you know, a certain amount of gift cards or something like that that you could, you know, specifically buy from the store that you're permitting her to buy at. And let her go figure it out. Now, all of a sudden, you're going to see her shop sales and get very creative.
At what age do you like having children have their own checking account and their own credit cards?
I'd like to see them weaned off sort of, you know, mom and dad onto their own when they're about 11, 12, 13, 14, in that age.
11 is early. That's young.
It is, except when you start seeing them shift to say, I want to make the buying decisions. Then you say to them, that's fine, but you're also making the spending decisions. Now, by the way, if they want to buy the designer jeans, stay out of the decision. That's fine. But they have to earn that extra money to buy that. Or they're just going to have designer jeans and go barefoot. And you have to stick to it. They really do have to learn the consequences of their buying.
Can I ask, would the same type of thinking go for, I mean, obviously there's going to be listeners who could afford anything that their kids wanted. And I think your point is, even if you can, that's still not a good thing. And there's going to be obviously listeners who are on a much tighter budget. So would, how would you address even specifically people who really have enough money that their kids could afford 10 jeans, but it would just not be prudent to do that?
Really advice for everybody. When you don't have the money, the decisions happen to be easier.
Right.
And what, this is amazing, and this is for grandma and grandpa and everybody out there. We are dealing with the I want generation. That's number one. Number two, there is something called the nag factor. And the nag factor is actually, somebody paid for a survey, this kills me, that our teenagers can nag. Guess how many times before we as parents say, okay, fine, and buy it?
I don't think it's many. I'm going to say 3.
I'm going to say more.
Mm-hmm. All right, Jim, how much? You're ready for this one? 9 times.
9?
Okay,
it takes
now,
that many?
Yeah. Now, listen to this one, because grandma and grandpa that are out there, grandma and grandpa can remember when they grew up and their parents lived in the Depression. There was no nag factor. You didn't stand there and go, I want, I want, I want, I want. It was no. And by the way, we heard those rules. So the fact of the matter is, we've created the I want generation by leaving the door open for them to nag us. There's not a parent in the world, and I don't care what socioeconomic level you live in, that says, oh, my kids are entitled to get whatever they want. Who's going to say that?
I think not very many people say it, but I think as a practical matter, a lot of parents, that's what they end up doing in terms of their behavior. One of the things that I thought was very helpful in your book was the saver versus spender quiz.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I also liked is, you know, you often take on the role of the stern parent, if you will. You know, you have to do some work to get an allowance, and not just things that that say children should do anyway. But one of the things that you mentioned was to teach children how to enjoy the money that they have saved, and that it's okay to spend some money. And that's something that, frankly, some of my clients have a hard time with. And you gave the example of the kid who didn't want to spend money on ice cream, and his cousins would end up buying the ice cream for him. And interestingly enough, and I'm in my 50s and my friends are about the same age, we actually have one of those guys. He never wants to spend money on anything. And recently he invited us to dinner, and we all said yes. And then he said, oh, by the way, would you go out and do the shopping and pick up the steaks and the salad?
There's always one in every crowd.
Isn't there one? By the way, it's usually your brother-in-law. I just want you to know that that's normally how it works. No pointing. Whenever I do speaking, there's always someone in the audience looking at someone else, and it's like, okay, we don't need to do that. You don't need to expose them. But we all know people like that. And it has nothing to do with being able to afford it. We're obviously talking about people who can afford it. And there's somebody, check time comes, and you know they don't reach for it.
Do you think that behavior starts when they're children? Really?
You see it, yes. You do see it. Now, Freud would describe this as anal behavior. It's a fear. I describe it just sort of a pain in the neck. But the fact of the matter is it's a fear. It's a phobia of spending. I just had, it was a tragic incident, a friend who died of brain cancer, and she was always the one who never got her hand on the check. We always picked up everything for her. And she always wanted to go to Paris. And a friend and I really bought into the fact that she didn't have any money, and she and I were going to, you know, give her this trip to Paris. And unfortunately, she died before she went to Paris.
That's a terrible story.
Hold it. She died with a $5 million estate.
That's even worse.
Now, what have we learned from this? You need to have a healthy balance between saving and spending. And what we think, our kids are born with a financial personality. And as Jim said, in my books, I sort of do a little quiz so you can find out if you have a saver or a spender. But we think savers are way better because you can't get yourself in trouble. This is what's interesting. When you have more than one child, it seems to be one is one personality and the other is the other personality. Even, listen to this one, even twins. Twins can be separated and they will decorate their homes exactly the same way and have their favorite colors be the same. When it comes to spending, one's a saver and one's a spender. I do not know why. I have yet to meet any parents who have two kids where their financial personalities are exactly the same.
And if you have more kids, it's totally different. There were five kids in my family, all completely different when it comes to finances.
Yep. How interesting is that, though? And I don't know why, but when we have lots of money, Jim, we'll do a survey. But I don't know why.
Well,
I don't know why.
I actually found so many of the things in your book really interesting. Getting young children to become involved with credit cards and comparison shopping and eBay. These are some concepts that I really hadn't done as a parent. And the other things that I really liked, and this is some of the problems that I'm having with some of my clients and even grandparents. A lot of my clients came from a house, and I'm included in that set, where the parents paid for college education, and that was kind of a given, and that's certainly what they want to do with their kids. But some of these parents, frankly, don't have sufficient funds to cover the cost of a $40,000 a year tuition, and I fear that some of them are jeopardizing their own financial security, and you also addressed that and said, well, that's not so good.
Well, and you're absolutely right. And I know in your practice that you tell people you can borrow for college, but you can't borrow for retirement. And we really have to look at that. And the parents have to come clean with the kids, too, that in today's world, if you've been downsized or you've lost a job, now community college may be a viable option for these kids. And there's nothing wrong with that. And you need to be able to say to the kids, I can't afford it, without any apologies afterwards. This is what it is. And I don't think it's prudent that you necessarily rack up $50,000 worth of debt per year for 4 years. It's a lot of money.
And do you think, Neil, in this economy, those conversations at least should be happening in a lot of households?
They better be happening. Yes, I agree.
And I mean just day to day.
Yep.
You know, we're approaching back to school, for instance. Back to school shopping is going to be going on next month. But with the things that are going on in the recession that we're in, it's probably going to be a different story.
It is going to be a different story. In fact, the statistics are beginning to come back right now that shopping is going to be down for back to school. and the people are looking to be more economical, and it's got to be a fact of life. This is now a situation to come clean with your kids. And again, don't apologize. Now let's think of ways we can save. And you have to start talking about needs and wants with these children.
You seem to be a big advocate of, you're using the word coming clean or total disclosure. I think the new word that everybody is using is transparent. You seem to be a big advocate of that, even things like in terms of wills, mm-hmm. and trusts and guardianships.
Yep.
You know, one of the whenever I have a client with minor children, I always tell them that the most important thing about doing the will, even for getting the money, for getting the life insurance, which is obviously important, for getting all financial considerations, is the most important thing is the guardianship provision of the will. In other words, who will take care of the child or children in the event that something happens to mom and dad. And you also seem to be an advocate of discussing that with your children and talking about that guardianship provision, and to let them know that there is money available to, you know, for them, and that they will always be provided for, even if something happens to mom and dad, and that there is both life insurance available, and that there is a guardian. And interestingly, I always talk to clients about that, but I don't talk to them about what they should be talking to their children about. So maybe you could expand on that a little bit let's assume that you have a child anywhere between, say, 4 years old and 21 years old, and you are doing a will, or you're redoing a will, or, as you point out, so many people don't have wills. And let's say that I could handle the lawyer part with the client, but if you could expand on what kind of conversation the parent should be having with the children, that would be very helpful.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more in terms that this is the most important financial planning that you're ever going to do. And the point is that we as parents want to reduce the stress on these kids, and God forbid something does happen to the parents. You don't want these kids to all of a sudden find out that so-and-so is the one raising them. I mean, what a horrible position to put your kids in. You want them to know that if anything happened to mommy and daddy, and by the way, even our little four-year-olds watch fairy tales where mom or dad have gotten killed. In fact, I defy anyone to mention a fairy tale that we certainly grew up with, that there wasn't some form of a single parent and or the kid was an orphan, by the way.
Oh, it happens all the time.
Right?
Bambi, number one.
Bambi, shot. You know, mom is shot in the first frame. Lion King, dad is trampled to death. I mean, it's nice. It's nice. You know, you can just keep going. Sleeping Beauty, and, you know, on and on and on and on. And the, you know, they're raised by wicked stepmothers. It's a nice thing. So it's not that these kids don't think about that. And what you want to do is not scare them to death. You sit down with the little ones and say, I'm sure nothing's going to happen, but we just want you to know. Aunt Allison is going to raise you. You're going to live in this room. You have to answer the questions they're going to have as a little tiny one. A six-year-old wants to know, are they going to have their own room, let's say, and still have their friends? And the answer may be yes or no. No, you're going to be moving to Pittsburgh with, you know, Aunt Susie, and this is where you're going to live. Let them know that. As they get older, you give them more and more information. And the older ones are going to want to know, do I get to go to summer camp? Do I get to do this? Do I get to do that? Do I get a car? Do I go to college? Do I whatever? And by the way, as you're sitting there, when your clients are sitting there with you, Jim, and you're figuring out what they do need that's appropriate in terms of insurance, they should be adding up those numbers with you, and there should be enough insurance with the beneficiaries being those people who are going to be guardians. One of the biggest things, as you know, as a financial professional, is that the kids, again, God forbid, we just think about, well, let's just cover college. Well, you may have to cover the cost of a room being added on for your children, or summer camp, or whatever that is.
And the other thing that I sometimes have to deal with is, let's say you have a brother, and I, by the way, this is my own little bias. I happen to like two-parent homes. I mean, that sounds very old-fashioned today, but so, for example, in my own will, the guardians of our child is, let's say, couple number one, and if couple number one is not together, living together, and married, then instead of it being to either the husband of couple number one or the wife of couple number one, it's couple number two.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's my own. Now, if you have, let's say, one person who you really want, whether they're married or whether they're not, or et cetera, mm-hmm. that might override that. But I sometimes throw that in, and I like to have several levels of mm-hmm. contingency, because sometimes people might be in a, say yes, but later their circumstances change.
I think that's really, really significant. To be able to think it through to that level.
We are going to take a quick break. We're with Neal Godfrey, and she is the author of the number one New York Times bestseller, Money Doesn't Grow on Trees. We are going to be right back. It is the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks.
The Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks, featuring the expert advice of Pittsburgh-based CPA attorney Jim Lang. More coming up on KQV AM 1410. The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all of your financial needs, turn to Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, 412-521-2732. Let's talk more smart money.
Talking more smart money. Thank you for joining us tonight. I'm Beth Burschak, Jim Lang, and our guest tonight, Neal Godfrey, who is the founder of Children's Financial Network, the author of the New York Times number one bestseller, Money Doesn't Grow on Trees. I want to give the phone number because I'm sure we have parents, grandparents listening tonight, and that number is 412-333-9385. If you have a question you want to toss out to Neal or Jim, 412-333-9385. We're talking about a very, very important topic, getting your kids financially fluent so that they become financially responsible adults. And just before the break, we were talking about discussing with your children wills, what would be in your will or how your estate would be set up if something happened to them. And Neal, you said you could start that discussion when the kids were very, very young. And Jim was just about to finish a point, so let's let Jim do that first.
Well, one of the things I like to do in practice is to actually really think out what would happen. So let's say for discussion's sake that your brother and your, let's say your brother and your sister-in-law are the choice for guardianship if something happens to both you and your spouse. And let's say that they're very nice people and that they would make very good parents or substitute parents, but they might be in a much different socioeconomic class than you.
Mm-hmm.
And so then let's say that you know, there's $1 million of life insurance and they're going into a home that really is not in a great neighborhood. And then I like to think out, well, should you allow some provisions in that trust for, let's say, a different neighborhood or a private school? Or what about, is it fair that the child can go to a private school and then his step siblings are all at the public school? I don't know if you address that. And I know that, you know, to me, one of the things that I really liked about your book and your credentials is that you are, or at least were, a real life banker. So you dealt mm-hmm. with these things professionally.
Sure. Well, my advice is to sit down, first of all, with your own spouse and make those decisions in terms of what is your value system and what is most important. And as you said, for instance, with your kids, is to have a two-parent household, and maybe that's to go to private school, and maybe you make that list so that you do it. And the kids are raised with this religion, and the kids are this, and the kids are that. You make that list for yourself so that you can discuss that and make those decisions for your own children. And then, after you've made them, you should probably try to find somebody who fits that bill and doesn't have to change their life. Because let's say if someone brought kids into your household, you might feel uncomfortable that the child, I'm making this up, is raised in a different religion or was going to school someplace else, or that kid was going to summer camp and not your kids. So what you have to do is then, I would recommend that you then sit down with the parents of the person that, that you've designated as the guardians and ask them, are you uncomfortable? And how do you feel about this? And they're hopefully going to voice their opinion.
Well, I think you do a great service by bringing this issue up. And I will tell you that in our office, we, for parents of young children, we probably spend more time on that provision than even the money.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I think it's real important. But could I now tap into your combination expertise of children and trust to talk about terms of trust for children? And then also probably, I'm going to guess that half our audience or somewhere in that area who have relationships with children might be grandparents. So maybe if you could also include grandparents in the conversation. My starting point for a trust, so in other words, somebody is in my office and we are drafting a trust for a child in the event that something happens to them and we want money to go for the benefit of a minor child, and maybe you could even help me with this,
mm-hmm.
is I might say, and let's assume for discussion's sake that the child is too young for us to really personalize it. So it's not like we have a lot of clues about whether the child's a saver or a spender or whether they're going to have a problem with drugs or alcohol or whatever else. So I think the more you know about a child, the more you could probably specify. But let's say that you're, and maybe it's even for unborn grandchildren, I would probably have something like this. The trust goes into, and let's keep it simple with just one child.
Mm-hmm.
It goes into an account, and the trustee has the power to withdraw principal and or interest for health, maintenance, support, education, postgraduate education, down payment for a home, seed money for a business. And I used to put in one summer in Europe, but people are getting a little bit tougher with that.
I like the one summer in Europe.
For the financial advisor, by the way. Yeah, right.
that's good. And then something like a third is released at 25, a third is at 30, and the trust terminates at 35.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that there are other practitioners who are doing these IRA trusts where the money stays in trust actually most of the child's life.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually have one client, and his kids don't really get any principal until they're 60. And I wanted to know if you had any opinions on drafting trusts, either for a grandparent or a child, in general, and what you think might be appropriate.
Well, I think your advice is wonderful, and I've worked on a zillion of these, and my favorite one was, I thought they were kidding when they first started talking to me about this, it was that they really wanted to control their kids from the grave.
They actually said that?
Yeah.
Those were the words.
Yeah, and I just was there chuckling, and I was just brought in as a financial expert. I don't, you know, I'm not licensed to do any of this. I was with another person, you know, like Jim, who was doing the actual stuff, who was glaring at me from across the table, saying to me through his eye contact, they're not kidding. 93 provisions were written, including the type of person they would date, the type of person that they would marry, how many times they would attend church.
But how can you write that in a provision?
They did.
No. I tell clients, I usually quote a flat fee,
yeah.
And then I always say, but that assumes that the client is being reasonable, and I use things like that as an example of not being reasonable. And I say, if you want that, it's not that we can't do it, but we can't do it for the flat fee that we quoted. So then we have to tell you, hey, if we want that, it's going to be so much extra. And then we can't do it unless we get your okay.
And then the psychiatric care that you'll be under,
right.
Having to deal with them. You know what happened? The end of the story is they did pass away. The son opted in, and the daughter opted out, and her money went to the son. So we have that on one extreme, and then we have the others that we hope that we're dealing with. And the point is, again, sitting down and really talking to them about what you want. I, number one, agree with you, there's not a magic age where all of a sudden these kids are going to get responsible. And people ask me that. Grandparents ask me all the time. What age? I don't know what age. You know, you tell me what you want. What's the money for? And that's the question they have to ask. Is it a legacy to fill in, to supplement their lives? Is it something for them to start a business? Is it for education? Tell me what the money's for. In my trust that I've set up, and I'm a new grandma, by the way.
Oh, congratulations.
Like congratulations.
Best thing in the world. it's worth hanging out just to make sure. That. But my thing is, I wanted my kids to be able to pick careers that they were passionate about and that they weren't forced in to taking a job that perhaps they didn't like to keep themselves in the socioeconomic level that they were in. Just because the world doesn't pay an investment banker as much as a violinist, I didn't want them to feel that they had to go do something that they maybe didn't want to do just to be able to feed themselves. So I personally am willing to supplement that. I'm not willing to supplement living on the beach, drinking margaritas, and, you know, tattooing your face. I mean, that's what I'm not willing to do. But that's my choice. And I articulated that to the kids. They knew that. They knew that going in.
I like that a lot. There's something that I do in my wills, and I was curious about what your opinion is on it. I'm a big fan of disclaimer-type planning. In other words, when I usually, let's say that we have a grandparent situation, and to keep life simple, let's assume a leave it to Beaver family, you know, mm-hmm. the old husband and wife, and they have mm-hmm. kids, and his kids are the same as her kids. And let's even keep it simpler, and those kids have kids. All right, so we have grandkids, children, and grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
And usually I do a type of estate plan where I name each other first. That is, the husband names the wife, and the wife names the husband. The B trust comes next.
Mm-hmm.
The children come third, and the grandchildren come fourth, and the child and the spouse gets to decide which money and how much goes to which source. So we're starting with the surviving spouse. The next choice is the B trust, which is usually used for bit larger estates. Then the kids, and then the grandkids. And mm-hmm. what sometimes we find is that sometimes the children, even if they both have, even if, say, there's two children and they each have their own set of children, one might be doing very well. One might be an investment banker, and the other one might be a single parent or something mm-hmm. like that. And what I like to do is I would like to give the child the choice of, do you want to inherit some money, or do you want to have some of the money that would have gone to you into a trust for the benefit of your children, that is, the grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
And what I do that I don't see any other attorneys doing, I anticipate the possibility that a child will, and the legal word is disclaim, but another word is let's say decline
mm-hmm.
money. But if so, let's say, for example, that my mom died, left me some money, and I didn't want or need it. And I won't go through the stretch IRA things, but particularly in an IRA or mm-hmm. a Roth IRA, I wanted it to go to my child. I would want to be the trustee of that money. And I hardly see any attorneys do that. They always assume that if the child doesn't get it, it will end up, it's because the child's dead, not because the child disclaimed or didn't want it. And I want to ask your opinion if you think it is a good thing for the child to have the choice of being a trustee for their children in the event that grandma dies and they don't want or need all the money.
I think it's great. I think it's wonderful. Again, I'm into disclosure. Sitting the kids down and saying, this is what we're doing, this is what's happening. And here's the deal, though, that it is almost impossible to treat everyone equally. Just like you said before, you don't know. There may be a child who does have a drug habit, and you would want their money completely controlled by somebody else and by health care providers, whatever. There may be a handicapped child where you would expect the other children to actually have that child live with them and be taken care of and have certain amounts of money. It's almost impossible, unless they're unborn, to be exactly equal. Again, I think it has to be a situation where the family gets together and you talk about it and you discuss it. And there may be some that say, I would like the money to go to my children.
You know, Neil and Jim, you two keep bringing up this disclosure, this transparency. But in some families, these discussions about money are very, very difficult.
Well, and hence, 85% of all divorces are due to money issues, and the biggest thing that breaks a family up would be money.
And so what do you do?
Unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, in an ideal situation, this would all work out beautifully, but what if you have a situation where the parents don't even want to talk to each other about money?
And that's, unfortunately, also in our culture, it's easier for us to sit down and have a discussion about sex than it is about money. Yeah. It's shocking that that's where we are. And you will see young couples who have had intimate relationships, and then you will sit down and you will be advising them and say, have you discussed salaries and debt and this and that? And someone will turn to someone and go, well, that's personal. What?
Right. And so then how do you get the children on board?
Say, what you do is, here's a chance for do-over. We're going to discuss it. It's non-negotiable. We're going to talk about it. We have to make it so that the biggest secret in the family is not money. I will rest assured there will be money problems if it is a topic that is not discussed. Because then you're going to, unfortunately, after the funeral, say, Mom wanted this to happen. Really? No, she didn't. She wanted this to happen. Have you ever had any clients doing that, Jim?
Oh, I've had plenty of that.
Right. And I know what Mom wanted. Uh-oh.
That's why I'm a big stickler of trying to take care of as many of those issues as possible. But on that same subject of comfort talking, and you're talking about the parents talking to each other or the parents talking to the children, what I often end up doing, let's say that I have clients in their 50s or 60s, and they have one or more living parents.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things that I try to do is every time I meet with somebody, I'm one of those CPA and attorneys, I can't do a will without knowing, I need to have a tax return in front of me, I need to know what's going on in their career, I need to know what their assets are. But the other thing that I ask people is, are you likely to inherit any money? Are
mm-hmm.
you likely to be on the hook to pay for your parents' support, or is it basically a break even? And so many of them say, well, you know, Mom and Dad have a house, but I really don't know their finances. And, you know, like even you mentioned, you had this good friend and you had no idea that she had $5 million.
Well, it gets worse than that. I'm sure you've had a zillion clients that were raised in the Donna Reed syndrome, where polite people didn't talk about money, and sometimes Mom didn't know what was going on.
Oh, I've actually known women that did not ever write a check.
Haven't you?
Yes.
And they'd heard, don't worry, you're taken care of. Which is not that it was not said maliciously. It was said with all intention that it was good. But I don't know what that means. Do you know what that means?
Well, I have a real problem with it. And sometimes what happens is, and I don't know if it's a macho thing or not, but a lot of times I will have typically a man come to an initial meeting saying, well, you know, I want to come and talk about wills. And I'm thinking, well, where's your wife? Oh, well, she doesn't want to be involved, right? Right. And I'll tell you what I tell them. I do offer free initial consultations to figure out what needs to be done and how much it'll cost. And I'm at the point now where I say, well, if you don't want to bring your spouse, I'm not interested in giving a free consultation with you. Because to me, even if one person is more financially astute or more financially experienced, it's probably equally important, if not more important, for both spouses to be there.
Well, I love that. And what I do is basically say, I also want to discuss the children. And as soon as that word is mentioned, you'll get both of them there.
Well, that's a good tip for me. That's the way to get Mom on board.
Hey, we are going to take a quick break. Neil Godfrey is our guest tonight. Money Doesn't Grow on Trees. She was the author, also the founder of the Children's Financial Network. We'll be back in just a minute. It's the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks.
The Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks, featuring the expert advice of Pittsburgh-based CPA attorney Jim Lang. More coming up on KQV AM 1410. The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all of your financial needs, turn to Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, 412-521-2732. Let's talk more smart money.
Talking smart money, I'm Beth Burshak with Jim Lang, and Neil Godfrey is our guest tonight. Founder of the Children's Financial Network, author of the number one New York Times bestseller, Money Doesn't Grow on Trees. But Neil, that is one of your adult books, we should call it, because you also have books that are written specifically for children. And I have to tell you that one that I actually sort of read through almost cover to cover was Ultimate Kids Money, which is great for, what age would you say a kid could pick that book up?
That's really good sort of middle through high school, and it's all the basics that we want our kids to know. And I have to say that's probably, of the books that I've written, one of my favorites, because I did it so that no topic covers more than a page of explaining something to somebody.
But it explains everything. It explains credit cards, bank accounts, what is the economy, what does that word even mean, and can all of these books be found on your website, childrensfinancialnetwork.com?
They can, and also you can go into Amazon and purchase books, and I also have curriculum, so if anyone's interested, they can get in touch with me. I have curriculum preschool through high school.
And while she's around, we're going to be with Neil for about another 10 minutes, 412-333-9385 if you have a question, but Jim also has another question.
One of the things that I found really interesting, and we're having a little bit of this in my family, not my children, but my brothers, is college graduates, and in your book you cited that 65% of the new college graduates are going home and living with their parents.
Wow.
And even just an astounding number, I forget the exact number, of even people who are well beyond college are now living with their parents. And what you said was so smart. You know, you were talking about drawing up a lease, setting up an endpoint, and don't necessarily bail your kids out of debt. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about and expand on what is going on now with college graduates and people coming back into the family home as adults, because it's a new phenomena, and I kind of fear a little bit for my own family. And if you could tell me what your experience has been in that area, that would be very helpful for me and my listeners.
Well, and those stats in terms of the kids returning to the empty nest, which isn't empty anymore, is even more staggering because of the economic times that are happening. They're but for the grace of God, if you're young and you've lost a job and you have parents that you can go back to, that's fantastic. But like you said, this has to be also an economic situation. You have to sit down, and I really think, again, transparency. Draw up a lease. This is what I expect you to do. This is what I don't expect you to do. This is not hotel mom and dad that comes with room service and gas in the car and that I'm buying all the food. Sit down and say, I need you to help with the utilities or whatever those rules are. And even if you can afford it, what you want to do is help these kids understand what it means to leave the nest and to be out on their own.
Do you think there's an age where it's going on too long, where they really just need to get out on their own?
When you really have the urge to shoot yourself in the face or them, then you know you might have hit that.
That's a sure sign, right?
That
there
would be a sign when you're banging your head against the wall. That would be the time.
Well, the other thing is, and I guess it's partly related to this, but I know that a lot of the clients that I work with, or at least a number of them, have the issue of sometimes, probably the majority of my clients could afford to help their children as much or even more than they are, but a lot of them frankly cannot, and it's sometimes a really tough issue when you have adult children and they have needs, and it just might not be prudent for you to support them or bail them out of debt or do things that you emotionally want to do. And one of the things I liked about your book, and I think that sometimes they say that, you know, advisors sometimes take the role of a stern parent, is that you kind of said, hey, wait, you have to think about yourself. You have to think about your own retirement. And if you could expand on the idea when there really is where there really isn't enough money to go around and for you to do everything that you want for your kids. Or now the big thing, and I see this a lot, is when your kids have kids that, you know, you don't want your grandchildren to go without.
Well, one of the things that is very interesting, and I know that you're seeing it in your practice too, that a lot of the money is skipping generations, going from, rather than right to the parents, skipping and going to the grandchildren. And again, it's one of those things that we have to have those conversations to be able to say, it's my money, this is what I want to do. I want you to live here, but. And in today's environment, whose retirement is not hurt?
Do you think, Neil, that sometimes parents think they're actually helping? Let's say a kid gets in, they come back, they move back in, maybe they have credit card debt, and the parent just keeps bailing them out. They keep paying down the credit card. They keep paying their bills. Do you think they really, in the back of their mind, they think, I'm helping them? But in reality, it's probably one of those things where they don't learn to be financially responsible.
I agree with you totally. Again, you have to sit down and say, are the expectations that you're going to live here for 6 months, a year, what are your plans? That's number one. How can I facilitate what your expectations are, and these are my expectations. My expectations are you're here for a month, or, you know, and then all of a sudden, you don't want guess who's coming to dinner, and then they're there forever. Or maybe you do want that. But you have to articulate your wishes to them and their wishes to you, and what you feel their role is in terms of helping in exchange for staying here, you're going to do, and then fill in the blank. Whatever that is, help me at the new room, clean up. And no, you're not allowed to have guests overnight. I don't want to wake up and be standing in the kitchen and there's a stranger next to me. I don't want that necessarily. So you have to set the limits, and you have to set the barriers, and you have to articulate them, and you guys have to negotiate. It's a negotiation. You have adult children coming back. Expectations are different. With my kids, one of the things that I said when they sort of left the nest, and they would come back and visit, it would drive me nuts if they were out late. I'm still a mother. I don't care if you tell me where you are. I need to know that you haven't been in a car accident.
Were they living with you, or were they just visiting?
No, they were just coming home for the summer and home for vacations. And my kids would look at me and go, what?
I'm 23.
We didn't check in when we were in college. Not the point. And it was really funny. They didn't get it until one night. I was over at my sister's, and we were actually doing some work, and I decided I would stay there. And I didn't call the kids.
Oh, good. Ooh, good idea.
But I didn't mean to not call the kids. Well, they had called the police. They had called the hospital. When I walked in at 2:30 in the morning, because then I decided, you know what, this bed is uncomfortable, I'm going home, the two of them were standing there. Where have you been? And it was so cute. And I just stood there going, oof. And never is there a problem. We get on airplanes. I mean, my kids are older. They call. I've landed. I have to do that. If I don't text my kids when my plane has landed, I'm in big trouble. It's just courtesy and check in, because you're saying I love you and I care.
But at the same time, I think you paraphrased a well-known quote. You also say that there are times when you just say no.
And there's tough love. It's the hardest thing to say no. No, you can't get the designer jeans. Nope. And you know what? We say no about other things. If your kid stood in front of you and nagged, I want drugs, I want drugs, I want drugs, I want drugs, and repeated after 9 times, you wouldn't say, okay, fine, you can have drugs. There are a lot of things we say no to. Don't expect these kids to grow up with a value system unless you can say no.
Do you think a lot of it is just pressure from peers?
Sure.
All of their friends have such and such jeans,
sure.
So they want it.
And you know what? You're going to hear, it's not fair. Well, you might want to nip that in the bud with the kids. It's not fair. Life isn't fair. Does anyone feel that they're paid a little bit too much?
Yeah, that happens all the time.
It happens all the time. I just heard you saying, you know, for break, I'm giving my salary back. A little too much. I really don't think I should. So, you know what? It's not fair.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Yeah, right. It works for me. Right. So, you know what? It's not fair. And it's not fair that Susie and Sally's house is better place to live. It's not fair that they're your kids, and it's not fair that you're their parents. Okay, it's the way it is. Now let's deal with it. It's not fair. Life isn't fair.
Could I ask you another question?
Sure.
We are down to the last couple of minutes.
So, here, yeah.
One of the big things, you know, I work with a lot of grandparents, and frankly, a lot of the grandparents have let's say more money than they are likely to spend during their lifetime. And I'm often a big advocate of Section 529 plans,
mm-hmm.
that are college education,
yep,
plans.
I love 529.
And the selling point, and I actually don't make a nickel buying or selling 529 plans, but the way I sometimes address clients is I say, look, it is for the benefit of your grandchildren. It can go to any of the grandchildren, mm-hmm. including first cousins, and it grows income tax-free, just like a Roth IRA.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ever need it, you get to take it back.
Yep.
Now, I've never, ever seen anybody or even heard of anybody that took back a 529 plan. But I was curious as to your opinion about 529 plans, both as a banker and a child finance expert, specifically even for grandchildren. For grandparents.
I agree. I think it's fantastic. And also you can, you know, as you said, switch the beneficiaries and pay for college all the way through graduate school.
Hey, Neil, you have been an absolutely wonderful guest. Thank you so much, Neil Godfrey. I'm going to give your website here, childrensfinancialnetwork.com, and that's where you can find all of the material that we were talking about tonight. If you had to recommend one of your books for children, which one would it be?
For kids, The Ultimate Kids Money Book, and for parents, Money Doesn't Grow on Trees.
And that's the one that I read and really liked.
Thank
Money
you
doesn't
so
grow
much.
On
ChildrensFinancialNetwork.com, our guest, Neil Godfrey. You have been great. And we have another workshop coming up on August 29th, 9:30 to 11:30, and then 1 to 3. If you want registration information, this is going to be at Pittsburgh Golf Club. Go to RetireSecure.com. Also, very quickly, we want to offer for the first five people listening today and the first five people listening on Sunday that call the office at 412-521-2732. You can dial my extension, which is 219. Jim is offering a free financial physical, which includes a review of everything, your investments, your estate planning, your retirement planning, your insurance planning. But it's the first five people that respond who live in PA, Pennsylvania. So 412-521-2732. Please call, go to extension 219. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another show, and you can find out more at retiresecure.com. It's the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks.
Thanks for listening to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. Portions of the audio that you just heard will be posted online at retiresecure.com. You can also find a list of upcoming events and topics at RetireSecure.com. To seek Jim's advice personally or to speak to a member of his dedicated staff at Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, call 412-521-2732. Join us again in 2 weeks when we talk more smart money.